So this is another figure from this paper by Dungara and Dunnigan, and it actually has somewhat more points on it. And here you have the bandwidth measured in megabytes per second. Remember, here's the ESP2 at 40 megabytes per second. Here's the Paragon at, well, here it's got at 171 megabytes per second. And here's the latency. So for the ESP2, it's around 40 microseconds. And so this plots these various parameters against each other. What you want to be is here. Low latency, high bandwidth. So that, for instance, you notice the Cray T3D is substantially better than the SP2. That's well known. The Cray has got much better communication network. It's a somewhat more modern machine, actually. The Paragon actually has better bandwidth but poorer latency than the Cray T3D. That's because the Cray T3D has a special primitive. It's essentially got a distributed shared memory architecture. It has a special, well, not a full one, but it has a special primitive called get, which goes and gets a single memory location from another processor. So that's what they mean by shared memory, because that's a shared memory implementation of the T3D. And here's actually the T3D in its distributed shared memory mode without using the special shared memory hardware, which you see is rather similar to the SP2. So if you like, these square points here illustrate, and this here is the convex, which also has distributed shared memory hardware. This is the advantage of the distributed shared memory hardware. It reduces the latency for accessing data in a different processor. It doesn't change the bandwidth enormously. The most important thing it does is reduce the latency, and it sort of has to do that to be useful, because if we're going to allow users to access memory as though it's memory, they're not going to group things together into big big messages. They're going to just go and get A of I, which is going to be a few bytes. So the distributed shared memory programming model implies small messages as the natural unit of information, and so it's essential to have good hardware support for that. Here we have an Ethernet connected system. But notice these latencies are quite big. So these are 10 microseconds. In 10 microseconds, you can do thousands of floating point operations. IBM SP2, 267 floating point operations per microsecond. It's sitting here at 40 or 50 microseconds latency. So that says it can do 10,000 floating point operations in the time it starts to send a zero length message. Yes. Yep. So that emphasizes how important it is, how dangerous communication is. All right. That's a reasonable place to stop. That's basically the end of this discussion, a short discussion of hardware. Next time we'll start, I think I will not discuss applications. I'm going to start software next week. I haven't quite decided whether I'm going to do high-performance Fortran or MPI first. I'm not certain. Well, that says that, that's why I classify granularities. That says that you're only going to do metacomputing with large grain size. Questions whether it's very large or mediumly large, you're not going to do metacomputing and access single memory locations. So that says that metacomputing only works with very large grains. Now the thing that's in your favor is that the following, that your user, I mean, problems are very big. I mean, there are millions of grid points or millions of particles. So there is a pretty, application programs have naturally very large grain sizes. So the only trouble is you've got to have a programming model which supports easily the production of large grain size programs. So there's a standard folklore that Pratt and Whitney use their network of RS-6000s to do engine simulation. They do that overnight. So, and the reason they can afford to use just ordinary network workstations is they're actually using classic data parallel algorithms with dividing the domain up into parts and putting one part in each processor. And it works because they have a huge number of grid points. So as long as you have a big enough problem, this will work. Now, if you wish to run a million machines, each with one grid point, you'll see mammoth slowdown. You will get a speed up of less than one on the World Wide Web. But it is quite practical even but that's not the problem you want to solve. You don't want to solve that problem on a World Wide Metacomputer. So you just, one of the reasons we go through this analysis is to say that you can actually lead to the wrong conclusion if you use the wrong method. I mean, what you're going to do is to look at a problem, find out what is natural level of parallelism, and look at a machine, see what its parameters are, and match the problem to the machine. And if you don't do that, if you run irrelevantly small problems on a powerful machine, you get lousy performance, but that's what you're meant to get, lousy performance. So it's extremely important to choose good problems to solve which are suitable for the machine. It's also true when you write a computer science thesis addressing some fundamental issue, you better decide it's an important issue and it's an issue that people care about, because there's some problems which just don't exist because people would never want to solve them. Really these principles are very, very trivial. They're very straightforward. I mean, there's latency, there's bandwidth, there's grain size, and the relationship between them is really rather obvious. And you get roughly the right intuition from that Laplace example. Although most problems are more complicated, apart from different numerical coefficients, essentially all problems have that general structure. And so you're going to get the good intuition by looking at that problem. But don't write a paper solving the wrong problem, like 100 by 100 Laplace on a 256-node SP2. You'll reach conclusions about your compiler or whatever you're testing, which are just irrelevant, because it will have an irrelevantly small grain size.